Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
NYG Weekly. Ethan and Weiss, no Nick this week. Before we get into everything, we got to take care of the housekeeping. Follow us on Twitter. Follow me at EthanGSN. Follow Weiss at NYG Daily. Follow Nick at Nick Zeraris. Follow the blog at GothamSN. Subscribe. We're everywhere. iTunes, Audio Boom, Google Play, Stitch Radio, Spotify. Subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe. Rate us 5 stars. Leave us a kind review. All right, Weiss. As bad a feeling on a Monday morning as you can have, and the Giants have had plenty of those over the last 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, call it however long you want. And yet, it really feels like there's not much to say. We had 1 week reprieve of talking shit about this organization and what a terrible job they did. And to that, we say, thank you, Jackson Dart. But it's back to reality. It is Monday morning, October 6th. The New York Giants are 1-4. Upcoming on their schedule, they have the Eagles on a short week, awful loss, followed by the Broncos, followed by the Eagles yet again. And we are now checking out tankathon.com, trying to figure out future GM and head coach combinations yet again. We are scouting top 5, top 10 NFL draft picks yet again. And around we go. And so we're here. I have really not much to say other than that. We'll get into the specifics. We'll get into the coaching, the more questionable roster decisions and roster management. And that's that. Weiss, what's going on?
After yesterday's game, I was a lot more frustrated than I should be based on all the things that you've said, how this is a continuation of what we've seen for a long time now. But it's incredibly frustrating, man, because, you know, you come off the Chargers game and you're thinking to yourself, like, okay, like that was a big win. Like that was a big, like, quote unquote, culture win to get that win, you know, starting 0-3, playing Jackson Dart, the excitement, seeing the stadium alive as it was. And you're like, okay, you're coming into New Orleans game. And even before the season started, we're all looking at that game. Like that's a win, right? Like there's not a lot of games where you can look at on the Giants schedule and say that we're going to win that game. But the Saints one was a win. And for you to kind of blow that game the way they did.
Let me just say, I stated on the podcast and many times that this game scared me.
It scared me too. Scared me because you're going into it expecting to win, if that kind of makes sense, right? And you're like, you shouldn't.
That was part of it. But also, like, yeah, the Saints suck. Yes, you're expected to win. Yes, you're coming off a loss. Kellen Moore. That's it. That's all I had to say. God knows the NFC East better than most. And to go into his home, that's it. That was my.
You're right. Kellen Moore has had success against the Giants for two different NFC East teams.
Yes, so. He has.
But nonetheless, like you thought, okay, this is not a talented Saints team. A lot of Giant fans in the stadium. Like you were thinking that this was going to be a big Giant win, and it started that way. But then, as I've said numerous times over the years, the Giants just, you know, when you are a chronic loser, you make losing plays, and it's turning the ball over. 5 straight possessions of you turning the football over. To me, that's.
I mean, isn't it technically 6? Because
the turnover on downs, sure.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just so embarrassing. You really wonder, what does Brian Daboll tell these players in meetings? What do you coach? What do you do during the week in practice? Like, what, like, after the second or the third straight turnover, like, what, like, don't you pull all the guys together and, like, tell them, like, we just turned the football over 3 straight times, right? Like, how do you let it go from 2 to 4, then ultimately to 5? Like, that to me is just so inexcusable. And it's such an indictment on yes, the players have to hold on to the football. That's obviously, right? That shouldn't even need to be said. But you're either coaching them or you're allowing it to happen. And Brian Daboll, after the third straight turnover, whatever the turnover was, whether it was a Jackson Dart interception or Cam Scadabu fumbling the ball or Darius Slayton, which I think we have to get into having an entire segment on Darius Slayton for a second. But how, as a coach, do you not pull these guys together and is like, we're moving the football down the field. This is a close game. You're turning the football over. Like, how do you not do that? Where is the discipline? Where is the accountability? You're letting these things slide. And that is a direct indictment on Brian Daboll. Because here's the thing. After the third guy fumbles the ball or the third guy turns the football over, you have to do something. And you allow it to happen. You allow it to get to five straight turnovers, something that I've never seen in a football game before. And it's yet again another embarrassing moment under this regime, this laundry list of embarrassing moments that we can look through throughout the last 4 years of all the embarrassing things that this regime has done and has been a clear indication that they are just simply not good at their job. And you talk about the roster management. Listen, Jalin Hyatt and Bo Collins are not NFL caliber receivers. At least that's what the Giants are telling us because they don't play them. And when they do play them, they don't do anything that makes you think that, hey, if the Giants get these guys the ball, good things will happen. The whole throw it deep to Jalin Hyatt thing doesn't work anymore because he just drops the pass or the ball hits him in the hands and he's not able to come down with it. He's not able to make contested. Or he can't even draw a DPI. Exactly. So if he can't do that, then he's pretty worthless. Bo Collins, undrafted rookie, I got to be honest with you. When he made the roster, I was shocked because we've seen a lot of these undrafted rookies come and go during the summer and everybody falls in love with him. I didn't really fall in love with Bo Collins. It wasn't like, oh, my God, this guy's making plays. He dropped a lot of passes and I was like, I don't know if this guy's even going to make the roster. But he made the roster. Point being, you had two free roster spots during the summer, Ethan. Jackson Dart built a rapport with little Jordan Humphrey. And then Dez Wells was a guy that he played at with Ole Miss. He didn't bring any of them in. I know people were talking about Isaiah Hodgins, but they didn't elevate anybody from the practice squad. On top of that, the running game, you constantly going into the game with two running backs just doesn't make sense. Explain to me why the Giants have three quarterbacks on their roster, but two running backs. It doesn't make sense. A team that wants to run the football. And when you ask Brian Daboll after the game, the only thing you really get is, well, we just thought that's the best thing to do to win. I don't understand how that makes sense. This whole Deontay Banks going in and out cornerback on third down. Listen, this is what I'm talking about. You're either coaching it or you're allowing it to happen. When Deontay Banks is on the field, right, he's either committing a turnover that wipes out a big play for your defense, like yesterday's Javon Holland interception, or he's making questionable decisions in terms of effort, either on a running play or a pass play. There's nothing
or the return or the returns. Did you see that video of him? I'm using air quotes blocking for Gunnar Olszewski on the return.
Yes, yes. So that's it. So like, why are you consistent? Like, whose idea is it to play Deontay Banks? Because we've seen nothing from him to show that he's capable of playing even that small role where you're rotating.
But it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. I tweeted this. You saw it. We can talk about it. They don't play him on first and second down. You are a former first round pick who's been relegated to kick return duty.
Do you know why they don't play him on first and second down? Do you know why they don't?
Hold on.
Do you know?
Tell me. Go ahead. Tell me.
My theory is the reason they don't play him on first and second down is those are running downs and they are afraid that he's going to show a lack of effort against the run, which he has on multiple occasions. So fine. That's why they resort to
fine.
No, but that's not an excuse. I'm just telling you that's their irrational thinking.
But if you're a former first round pick who's handling kickoff duty and who's not able to stop the run, so you're not playing on first and second downs, it means you stink. It means you stink. No. Flat out stink. Cannot play. We've seen how many replays of this guy unable to turn his head around in coverage. I feel like I'm Seinfeld with the car reservation. You know how to cover the guy, but you don't know how to turn your fucking head around to make a play on the ball. So then why does this staff have him out there only on the most important down? Third down. It's the most important down.
He played eight snaps yesterday, right? One of those snaps, and there was 66 total defense snaps, so he played eight of them. One of them was the pass interference that wiped away the Javon Holland interception. The second one, there was another play where he got beat, I think, on a third down, a big third down, and gave up a first down. So those are just two of the eight plays. And I'm sure if we go and look at the all 22 of the other eight plays that he played, we'll see that he probably messed up again. Point being, like you said, like what is the logic behind this?
There is none. There's no logic to their utilization of Deontay Banks. Like, does Brian Daboll think that if he's only got 51 of 53 roster spots filled, then that maybe on a short week against the Eagles, it carries over and he gets 55? It doesn't make sense. We've seen it twice now with the kicker, and now we're seeing it in multiple weeks, not filling out a roster. Two running backs when one of your running backs is a rookie, and the other one is Devin Nepoteri, who's only got the job because of his connections with this organization in Buffalo. He brings nothing.
Looks finished, by the way. There were a lot of holes that he didn't yesterday. He could have got a – it should have been a 10- or 15-yard run instead of a 6-yard run.
And then the wide receiver situation makes no sense. It really doesn't. Like, I'm sure you've got this whole thing. You're going to yell about Darius Slayton. I'm going to let you do that in a second. But if Jalin Hyatt's not good enough to get out there – when the non-Malik Nabers wide receivers are Wandale Robinson and Darius Slayton, why is he good enough all of a sudden when Malik Nabers gets hurt? You don't bring anyone in. You're going to come out after you lose arguably a top two receiver in the league at this point, I would say. You're going to lose a top two receiver in the league and not bring in anyone with a rookie quarterback. You're not going to scour the veteran market. You're not going to trade a 6-round pick for someone. My guy, at this rate, you're not going to be here to use that pick anyway.
Yeah. They had three guys in their practice squad. What's the point of having a practice squad if you're not going to elevate anybody?
It makes no sense. I'll let you talk about Darius Slayton, but just like we had 1 week, and I'm not even going to say we. Brian Daboll had 1 week where he probably went home after the game and was like, fuck, man, this kid might be able to save my job. And now we're going to be 1-7. And he acts like it. He acts like he knows. There's zero fire, zero energy. And one other thing, you're talking about the mistakes and you know, trying to like tell guys to cut shit out. You're either coaching it or allowing it to happen. Did you see John Gannon's reaction to the DeMarcado fumble out the end zone? He almost fought him on the sideline.
The crazy thing about Brian Daboll is, I don't know if you realize this, but when it's a mistake that the officiating makes, he'll be right there to chew them out. There's been numerous instances where he's in their face yelling. I mean, just acting like a crazy man. But five straight turnovers. Did we see any reaction from Brian Daboll? Did we see anything? Did we see Darius Slayton drop the pass? Right, which was an amazing throw by Jackson Dart. If you're somebody that's like down on Jackson Dart after yesterday, I want you to go back and watch that throw he made to Darius Lane. The ball placement on that was just beautiful. That gives you a little glimmer of hope if you're someone that's lacking it. But anyways, he drops that pass, then he turns around and fumbles the ball. A guy that you gave a captain to, a guy that you brought back. Like, here's the thing about Darius Slayton. Darius Slayton's probably a great guy. He's probably locker room probably really, really likes him. But if being a great guy equated to being a really good football player, then I would want 100 Darius Slaytons. The problem with Darius Slayton is this, right? This is the problem with Darius Slayton. Darius Slayton is a great player to have on a losing team when you're not winning games anymore, where you can look at it and say, hey, at least Darius Slayton has now had five straight games with seven catches for at least 90 yards. You know those pointless stats that people like to bring up in like November, December?
Yeah,
when the team is like two and eight, right?
Yeah, you look back at the end of the season, you're like, oh, Darius Slayton had 800 yards and five touchdowns.
Oh, he had 800 yards and five touchdowns. Oh, last six games of the season, he had, you know, four of those seven touchdowns, right? Which I wonder why. But that's who Darius Slayton is. That's who he's been in his career. But when you're counting on Darius Slayton and you need Darius Slayton to step up, right? Like we needed him yesterday against the Saints, against a weak Saints secondary. What did he give you? Nothing. A negative burger. And then he got hurt.
Yeah, that's the crazy thing. Who's going to be wide receiver one next week?
To me, because he was such a negative, Yeah, I mean, he's probably not going to play on Sunday. These hamstring injuries tend to...
We're, against the Eagles, we're going to be rolling out Jalen Hyatt, Wandale Robinson, Bo Collins, Theo Johnson, and Bellinger.
Daniel Bellinger.
We're like, they're going to run 12 the entire game.
Yeah. So here's my thing, though, is like, as a coaching staff, do you think that you're able to sustain a 60-minute game plan of just running 12 personnel? Like, do you actually think you'll be able to do that? And you're not able... The answer is no, by the way. But then why is Jalen Hyatt and Bo Collins played 34 and 28 snaps, respectfully, and they combined for one catch for 7 yards? You just can't... That's just not... The back end of your receiver room cannot be guys that you cannot count on. And with a young quarterback like Bo Collins stopping on the route, I mean, what the hell are we doing? The guy can, yeah. It's how does that happen? And so, again, it's these mistakes. And with Darius Slayton, he's not a wide receiver too. He is a really good wide receiver to have on a team that's constantly losing games and playing from behind. Because when there is no pressure on him, he will give you that 100-yard receiving game. But when you need him, and you need him to step up, and you need him to be that wide receiver too, because your wide receiver down is hurt, you're not going to get that. He's not a guy that teams are going to have to game plan for. He's not a guy that I think you can look to, excuse me, and depend on. Darius Slayton is great at one thing and one thing only, and that is, when you need him, he's going to do something stupid, whether drop a pass or fumble the ball. And unfortunately, because the receiver room is just a complete abomination behind him, you can't even pull him off the field for disciplinary purposes, because he just costs you the game on two big-ass plays because you got nothing behind him. So, again, you're either coaching it or you're allowing it to happen. And Brian Daboll continues to allow these type of things to happen. Doesn't hold anybody accountable. Why Deontay Banks? Explain to me what Deontay Banks has done to deserve playing time, but Evan Neal is inactive on game days. Because Greg Van Roen, right, who is the starting right guard, has been significantly worse at his position than Cordell Flott has been at the cornerback position. So why are you pulling Cordell Flott off the field for Deontay Banks on third down, or playing Deontay Banks on third down, but Evan Neal's inactive on game days? Explain that to me. When it comes to effort, we've seen multiple times where Deontay Banks has messed up. So where are these decisions coming from? It's so much inconsistencies with this coaching staff which is why I am completely out on it. I know the general manager has to go too, but Ethan, I don't know where you stand on this. But when I look at this team, I say their issues should be solely on the coaching staff. Unless something comes out that Joe Shane is, you know, involved in game day planning and deciding who plays what amount of snaps.
I think you can make a really strong argument for that.
And sure. But unless we get concrete evidence of that, I mean, this to me is all on the coaching staff. Spencer Rattler is 0-10. Went into the week with his chest out saying, I can make plays against the secondary. The secondary does nothing. And they proceeded to do nothing on Sunday. Nothing. An 0-10 starting quarterback spoke with his chest out like that in the middle of the week and basically told you that your secondary stinks, that your scheme stinks. And what did he do? He carved you up. He got a big play out of you. He went up and down the field on you. He got the ball out quickly, and you made zero adjustments. And there was zero – he gave you bulletin board material, right? He gave you that. He said what your secondary is, and you did nothing. And this is a starting quarterback who's 0-10 in his career, 0-10.
It is on the GM, though.
I'm not saying it isn't. But when I look at it this year, I the issues that they're having, there's been so much – coaching problems and coaching inconsistencies that, yes, Joe Shane should get fired. He should have got fired last year. But I'm talking about, like, my issue right now is with the coaching staff, because I do think there is enough talent where you should not be 1-4 right now.
Yeah, of course. I mean, how many times did we have this conversation right before Jackson Dart start? This team should not, under any circumstances right now, be 1-4. None. They should have won week one. They should have beaten the Commanders had they gotten any semblance of red zone competency from their quarterback. They could have beaten the Cowboys. They should have beaten the Cowboys.
To me, the Cowboys game was the big coaching blunder, how they're playing prevent defense when Brandon Aubrey can make a field goal from 70 fucking yards.
Yeah.
And they're basically giving them that field.
But listen, what year is this under this regime? Year four?
No, that I totally agree. Yeah.
How many draft misses are there? How many bad contracts are there? And I give him credit. And I know our good friend Will is listening and he's probably beside himself right now. There are two aspects to the general manager job. There's the process and then there's the evaluating of talent. Okay. Shane's despicable predecessor had no process. It was the worst process. But at the end of the day, the guy had some pretty massive hits.
I would say had better hits than
Joe. He does. Shane he had, has right? a better, in terms of impact on this current roster, year four.
Two best Dexter players Lawrence, on the Giants. Andrew are Thomas. Still-
okay. You can follow a great process, but if you can't scout for shit and the coaching staff that you hired can't coach for shit, you are responsible. Everyone's going to get fired at the end of the year. All right.
I think so.
100%. Because we're going to be staring at 1-7. The locker room's going to give up with the exception of maybe Jackson Dart and Scadabo. All right. Even Brian Daboll knows it. Look at his demeanor in these press conferences. He's got the Eagles on a short week, missing Malik Nabers and Darius Slayton. He's going to be starting the fucking milkman out there at wide receiver two. All right. Then the Denver defense. And then the Eagles again. He's going to be 1-7. The entire locker room is going to be checked out, full well knowing that this guy's getting fired. They have nothing to play for unless that player happens to be in a contract year. All right. Anyone that's even a little bit banged up is going to say, actually, I can't play. And it's going to be a catastrophe. And at that point, we're going to be rooting for the Jets to be slightly better than us so that they maybe get a couple wins. Talk about another disaster. New York football's in the fucking sewer. But this everyone's checked out. Someone's getting fired. And I mean, listen, am I pro firing someone on staff or firing a coach mid-season? Under normal circumstances, probably. But with a rookie quarterback,
yeah,
I'd rather not. But you look at me. Tell me the Giants now go into Thursday night after losing to a winless Saints team and a quarterback that never got a first win. What was he, a fucking fifth or sixth round pick? All right.
0-10 as a starter. You need to put an emphasis on that.
Yes, 0-10 as a starter. And by the way, before I finish this, let me just circle back because I wanted to mention this while you were talking. That 3rd-and-2 flea flicker.
Yeah.
To not go for that on 4th down. Are you fucking kidding me? I was apoplectic after that play. To call that on 3rd down at midfield and then not go for it when you had the momentum. Totally gave the game away. It was over after that. And if you're plan originally was to not go for it on 4th down. Should you not complete this flea flicker? Why are you not just running the ball? Cam Scadabo, you need 3 yards. He'll get you 3 yards. That's like his whole thing. That's his whole thing.
They ran for 136 yards, by the way.
So, all right, back to, so you can't, you seriously, I want you to look at me. All right. Do like, what was That's So Raven. You remember that show where she had like the flash? Yes. It was a flash forward or the flashback? I don't remember. But, you know, do Jimmy Neutron brain blast. Pick your old school Disney Nickelodeon cartoon. All right. You and I are sitting here in 3 weeks' time. The Giants have now just lost, call it 35-13 to the Eagles this coming Thursday night. They just lost by 20 to Denver. And then the Eagles blow them out again. And you're going to tell me that the chance and the calls to fire someone are not going to be loud enough for something to happen, even after this Thursday game. I mean, I would rather Jackson Dart just have a consistent staff, even if they're bad throughout the course of the season. Like, let them do their thing. Fine. Try not to ruin him too much. But like, seriously, we're sitting here in 3 weeks. You lose to the Saints to an 0-10 quarterback, followed by 3 potential blowouts with a banged up roster. You're not going to fire anybody?
I think if I were to see some changes, I wouldn't be surprised if I wouldn't be surprised if Brian Daboll takes the play calling back from Mike Kafka.
As like a
symbolic thing.
Joke.
And not even do it like on an official level, but more so you'll just randomly see Brian Daboll with the play sheet talking into a microphone. In terms of like...
And then, you know what? They're going to be dumb enough to think that no one's going to notice.
Yeah. I mean, I could see that, but I just don't get the sense that they would fire Brian Daboll in season.
Kafka?
No, I don't think so. I think they wouldn't even properly take play calling away from him. Like I just said, I don't think they'll fire him. Defensively, I don't know how you can justify firing Shane Bowen when your defense is not really the problem. Yes, Shane Bowen's a problem. His scheme is the problem, but they held the Saints under 20 points yesterday. Like, you should win that game. They've, outside of the Dallas game, the defense hasn't given up a chunk of, you know, points. You can't point to and say the defense. It's the offensive problem. It's Brian Daboll. It's the
fact. I agree, but I'm just telling you, it's factually, it's going to get untenable.
I don't know. I thought it got untenable last year after the benching of Daniel Jones and what happened there, and he got released.
But you know what? That was our little bit of blood, right? That was everyone. Okay, finally, it's over. It's done. We're not expecting much from the backups, but like this catastrophe of an experiment is over. They don't have that right now because they already benched Russell Wilson.
But to me, Ethan, like, it's just like, I have no, and again, I'm not saying this because I don't want changes to come. I just have no appetite for another GM head coaching search. Not under this ownership role. Like, I don't
get hungry, buddy, because it's coming.
No, I know. Obviously it's coming, but I just have no, like, there's no excitement.
And let me tell you, the options stink. It's all I've been talking about or thinking about for the last 3 weeks. The options.
I have no.
Let me ask you one question. Who is the last, say, quote unquote, good head coach to get fired and immediately take another head coaching job? There's only one that I can think of. I'm sure maybe there's another or two that I'm missing that our listeners will let us know.
That was fired by
an NFL team and then immediately took a job the next year without taking a year off to do some fucking media or consulting or something like that.
So Mike McCarthy took a year off.
Yep.
It's right on the tip of my head. Oh my God.
He's a Super Bowl winner.
Yes.
Former in our division.
I was going to say Bruce Arians, not Bruce Arians, because he went from coordinator to head coach. Mm-hmm. Todd Bowles was his defensive coordinator. It was not Todd Bowles. He was in our division. It was Andy Reid, right?
It was Andy Reid. And that was like over a decade ago.
Yeah.
All right. So anyone who's out there with dreams of John Harbaugh getting fired and then just immediately coming to this dumpster fire. Yeah.
John Harbaugh, it's coming to an end in Baltimore. That's happening. What he does afterward, I don't know. But yeah, I mean, listen, I'm all for. I see a lot of people, you know, already having that discussion. I have zero appetite for it, especially in October.
You know the names that are being thrown at me?
I saw it, yeah.
Bill O'Brien. I'm fine with Lane Kiffin. Bill O'Brien,
yeah. I mean, I saw Harbaugh, saw John Gruden. I don't know.
Gruden's never coaching in the NFL again. It's a nice
let alone with the Giants.
No, you know who the best head coaching option is that will be 100% getting interviews next year that will not come to the Giants?
Brian Flores.
Correct. Because he is actively suing them for being racist. That's where we are. We're in year four. We're going to fire our GM and head coach again. And then very likely the best available candidate presently is suing the Giants for racism. That's New York Giants football, baby.
And nobody moves you in college either, right?
Besides Kiffin.
Could potentially Stefanski move you if he gets let go by the Browns?
He just got extended, I think.
Did he? Did they give him an extension?
I think they gave him an extension. That's the thing. Unless the 49ers are dumb enough to fire Shanahan or something, you know, I think Stefanski got the extension. I think O'Connell still has years left, and they're not going to fire him. It's like
Good organizations
don't let good coaches go.
Stefanski and Andrew Berry got an extension last August 2024.
So there you go.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not even like thinking about that, but just diving in right now, it's like, yeah, you're right. But it's ownership gives you no hope. This team gives you no hope. Even when you think they do the right thing, it ends up being the wrong thing. Even though it starts out great, it typically ends bad. Whether it's a game, whether it's a head coaching regime or whatever, there's no belief that they will ever, ever, ever get it right. Nope. And this is now 13, 14 years removed from their last Super Bowl win, and they're no closer to it they are now than what they were 4 years ago. So, then Spencer Rattler, 0-10. Talk shit about your team.
They got to break the curse.
I don't know how they break the curse.
You know what they got to do? They need Coughlin and John Mara to shake hands before one of them kicks the bucket.
I was going to say they need to put grass in MetLife Stadium. Why don't they just give MetLife Stadium to the Jets and go build their own stadium somewhere else where they can put grass? Like, if the Jets are being cheap, why? Like, we don't draft a lot of good
players. Giants are cheap too. They just sold 10% to the Cokes. Yeah, fucking cheap too.
But I'm saying, like, I wasn't here last week, but I'm like, how are people still defending the MetLife Stadium turf and making excuses for it? Like, eight players have torn their ACL in the last like 5 years on the damn
when the
field.
Player when the head representative from the NFL Players Association, David Bakhtiari, has to write a letter complaining about it.
You don't draft great players, but it seems like every great player you drafted in the last 5 years has suffered some type of an injury on that fucking field.
You weren't here last week, but I was yelling at Nick about this. Like, from a financial perspective, it makes no sense. One, you want players to come and sign here. Two, you don't want to invest. Jackson Dart's a superstar. What contract is he going to get? $250 million, $300 million by the time like his contract is up? Ungodly amount of money. You don't want to protect that asset?
Yeah, I don't want to protect Malik Neighbor and just rip the
Bills are building a new stadium and they're putting grass on it. Pay up.
I think that's how you break the curse. You got to put grass on that field.
I think they just need to burn the whole stadium down. Personally,
it's a disaster.
That's where we're heading. Go ahead.
Philly on a short week.
Yeah,
seems like a get right game for that offense. I suspect it's going to be
Philly short week off a loss.
Off a loss, yeah. Although I think they have some issues of their own that are problematic. But it's the Giants.
Overcomable against the Giants.
The Giants are your get right game, even though you're not right.
They're the slump buster. Saquon Barkley, by the way, on pace for 900 rushing yards this year.
I have no comment on that.
Yeah, me neither. All right. We got anything else?
No, that's it.
Okay. All right. Follow us. Subscribe. We'll talk to you guys after Thursday's disaster. Goodbye.
Peace.